weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to African Andrew for guiding us through the afternoon. It's Monday the 25th of March. I'm Raf Giallo in the company of Ruby Walsh and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, John O'Shea reflects on his first match in charge of Boys in Green, plus Alan Cawley and David Connolly look ahead to tomorrow's assignment against Switzerland.
In Gaelic Games, we look back at a decisive weekend of action in the Allianz League with Niall Moran and Brendan Devaney. Plus, we'll tease out the rest of our weekend sporting highlights. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
Well, hello to you, Ruby, and also Alan Cawley, looking very happy with himself as well today. How are you?
Evening, Raf. I'm good. Yeah, all is well. Thanks be to God.
Good start
of Easter week.
Yeah, I'm good as well, Raf. I'd really like to know, though, why Cawley is looking so happy with himself. Come on, Al, spill the beans.
No, I'm just a happy man, Ruby. You know,
No, you're not a happy man. Come on, tell us the truth.
Happy man. I'm going for the zip neck like John O'Shea, and I'm hoping he's going to get the job. It's all caught on. Just see the style of him on the sideline on Saturday night. I thought he looked really well.
Oh, really flashy. What do you think? Go on, Al. What's your honest opinion? Who is going to get this job and what's going to happen? Do they really have somebody or are they just making it up?
I'd like to think they have somebody because that's what they've told us and I kind of take people at their word. But the longer it goes on, Ruby, I don't know. And I said here Friday, whilst all the uncertainty remains and this chase seems like it's never ending, the closer John O'Shea is to getting to the job. And that was always going to depend, I felt, on how Saturday went. And obviously tomorrow night, Saturday, as we know now, has gone very well. He looked at home on the side of the pitch. I thought the team played very well. We'll obviously get into the more deeper analysis of it. But I thought they acquitted themselves very well. I think he spoke really well in the media all week. And if tomorrow goes well, I see no reason as to why they shouldn't give him the job, because I feel that's as though is what the general consensus seems to be out there now. But as you say, whether they have someone lined up like they told us remains to be seen.
Yeah, that's your sporting highlight.
Well, that's his. Ruby, what's yours?
What's mine? I'm kind of struggling for one. I thought the Showjumpers winning in Florida was great. Win the Nations League at the weekend was great. Obviously, it is an Olympic year and we have a Showjumping team qualified for Paris. So I thought it was great to see the Showjumping team in good form. It'd be a strong squad to have if they can get the right four to Paris in the summer, and they seem to be in really good form at the moment. So from an equestrian point of view, Raf, I'd say that was my sporting highlight. You were in RTE all weekend across everything that was happening. What was yours?
You know, I always mention Formula 1 when I'm on, so I stayed up to watch the Australian Grand Prix on Sunday early hours, and usually it's a bit of a waste of time. I think, Alan, as you probably noticed when I'm on here, it's always, you know, the end of story. Max Verstappen wins, and yeah, fair play to him as well, he's a great driver. However, mechanical issues beset him, so he went off after a couple of laps. And then Carlos Sainz, who's got a bit of a remarkable story. About a month ago we were talking about Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari, and Carlos Sainz is the fall guy. He's the one who's been dumped. He's essentially unemployed starting from next year. Obviously he will get a team at some point. And then 16 days before this Australian Grand Prix, he had appendicitis, so he was having surgery, and you know, 16 days later he's there winning a Grand Prix.
It's pretty, wow,
pretty remarkable. And the other sporting highlight, but this is just a very personal and biased one,
Leitrim.
Well, you got there before me. The Leitrim footballers getting promotion from Division 4 doesn't happen very often for us, so that was good on Sunday. We're playing Leash in a league final on Saturday, I think it is, at Croke Park. And I was there 5 years ago when we last played in it, because we tend to have big gaps between our visits to Croke Park. It was 1994 for that.
Sligo or something similar, don't worry, Raf.
We only get to go there because we're in Leinster.
On that, Ruby, we actually discussed, I'm glad you brought that up, Raf, because Andy Moran's comments, obviously, after I watched the Sunday game last night, and I watched the hurling semi-final yesterday, and obviously coming up to the National League finals. And we were discussing this on Friday, Ruby, and the debate has broken out about, obviously, teams being in a final now, but whether they really care, because it's only a week out from the championship, 2 weeks. But obviously Andy Moran, as Raf said, because Leitrim, it's so rare that they get there, is all gung-ho to go and win a National League title. I think the Division 3 is something similar. 1 and 2 is a bit... Although Brendan Rodgers last night said for Derry, any National League title they're going to go. Mickey Hart came out today and totally disagreed with Peter Canavan's comments, and I thought it was really good as well. I would be of the view, Ruby, I don't know what you think, and I said it here on Friday, that if you're in a National League final, you go and try and win it.
Well, I can't see the reason in turning up and not trying to win anyway, Al. So, yeah, I would agree with you there, but it's like everything. I mean, I suppose if you're playing with Dublin and you get used to winning All-Irelands or with Kerry, does the National League mean as much to you if you're playing hurling with Limerick or Kilkenny? You can maybe make the same argument, but there are more counties than them in the country, and I would imagine a National League medal will mean plenty to a lot of people. And when you retire and you sit down and you think, well, what did you actually win? I always look at Matt Letizia playing soccer. I'm sure he'd love to have won an FA Cup.
Yeah, interesting. I heard him on a podcast recently, so all he wanted to do was entertain. But I just feel, Ruby, at that, like, and I totally get the argument, because the condensed nature of the league season and the Gaelic season and the championship starting, but all these players and teams start out at the start of the year with only two trophies to potentially win, a league or an All-Ireland. So only two or three
And the provincials as well, for certain counties it means a lot.
Two or three can only win the All-Ireland. So a National League title in the league, I would have thought, all guns blazing, try and go and win one.
Yeah, but it might be the way the season is now sort of condensed into...
But isn't that sad, really? That's sad that you're kind of... What's the point in playing it?
Yeah. Ruby?
I kind of would agree with Alan, to me. But look, I'd probably see it differently. I was greedy. I wanted to win everything I probably could. So I was all for winning. I would be training a bit less and winning more games, to be honest with you.
Yeah, now we're going to turn our thoughts to the soccer, of course, Ireland and Belgium's nil-all draw in that friendly on Saturday. And David Connolly's joining us on the line. But first, let's listen to John O'Shea.
John, you seem to be very relaxed in this role since you've come into it. Has it been what you expected? And has anything in particular surprised you in the role?
Well, I wouldn't say surprised me as such. It's obviously... You're working in football since I finished playing, in terms of planning and hoping that you get a chance to manage one day. That's what I've kind of always said. But obviously, my idea from the start was to learn the ropes in terms of being assistants to different coaches, different managers, and hopefully then eventually to get the chance to lead a team myself. So I wouldn't say there's surprises as such, but... It's just a different challenge, and obviously you're the one to have to make that decision on the 11, on the squad to pick, and what way we're going to go about it, with the advice of a very good support network around you.
And just on that, the importance of your team, your management team, has obviously come to the fore as well.
Well, that's the key bit. That's the key, that's the idea. You have a team around you, and that's what we stressed in terms of the team itself that's picked, the players supporting them. The backup that they gave their teammates the other night was amazing too. So you put that combination together and you hope you have enough to get over the line in games.
And if you are to, you know, pass the baton and hand over the role to the whoever is coming in, like, what would you say to them in terms of the squad that they are inheriting?
Well, what I'd be just focusing on now is the last game against Switzerland for me, in terms of what my focus on was on right from the start when this kind of process happened. Two games, John, focus on that. Get the best from the boys. Bring this group together in terms of with the staff, getting the lads to know my staff as quickly as possible, and getting the kind of bond together quickly to go into two games where you know you're going to face challenges, but two games where you know you can be getting good results as well.
Do you think that, finally for me, that international friendlies still serve a purpose, because obviously there's less international friendlies now because of the Nations League, but do you still think there is a benefit to maybe blood players or whatever in friendlies rather than competitive games?
Yeah, well, look, that will always, it's the case for me, was my remit was, look, focus on these two games. If my remit beforehand was, John, you're the full-time new manager, it might be a different situation. But the kind of focus for me was these two games, John. Look after those two games and see what happens then.
All right, John O'Shea there speaking to Dave Kelly. And before we bring on David Connolly, Ruby, very interesting last portion of that interview.
Yeah, John, look after these two games and we'll see what happens then. Am I reading too much into that, Alan Colley?
Well, I actually listened to a lot of that earlier on, but I didn't hear the last bit, and I heard Dave Kelly's questions up to that last bit, and it was funny that he said, if it was like they said to me, look, you're the full-time manager, John, it would have been a different story. So I feel as though he would want the job. I spoke to people in the stadium who would be very close to John at the weekend after the match, Ruby, and I think if he was put in a position where they came to him tomorrow and says, look, we want you to be the permanent manager, I think he'd be over the moon, and I think he'd be delighted with it, and he'd love to get his teeth into it. I was even watching in terms of the backroom team that he's assembled, and I was sitting behind them at the match at the weekend, and I was watching a lot what was going on the line as well, and them all working together, a cohesive unit, in terms of Paddy McCarthy up offering his thoughts and giving John instructions. Glenn Whelan was in front of, I suppose, the iPad, what we see with a lot of the coaching staff nowadays, watching things. Brian Kerr was to the left of them offering little bits of advice as well at times, coming over and back. So I've been very impressed with how the whole thing has gone. Now, I know you can't get carried away off a friendly game, and I'm not as such, but just in terms of the whole setup and how he's acquitted himself, John O'Shea, I think he's been a credit to himself, really.
Yeah, and before we get into the, you know, the details of that Belgium game and then also the Switzerland game tomorrow, David Connolly, just on that. David, you know, when you look at the setup as Alan has described it there, would you be opposed if you heard in, you know, this early April date that John O'Shea and then the people that are around him as well do stay on?
Good evening, lads. No, I certainly wouldn't be opposed to that. I mean, I think like Al says, when John... you know, made his coaching staff known, I think, you know, you look at it and it had a nice blend, because, I mean, John's, you know, been a coach for a little while. He's got Paddy, who I played with Paddy McCarthy at Leicester, and Paddy's very well respected, did great success lower down. Glenn, obviously, former, you know, international vast experience. And then Brian Kerr's there for, you know, a bit, as I called it, a bit of grey hair, a bit of experience, and another set of eyes, and I guess, you know, bring a calming influence. And like Alan said, I looked at how they worked on the sideline. You know, everyone took a back seat apart from John, and rightly so. John was stood in the technical area, and, you know, he's the man in the eye, in the limelight, and the rest are there to support him. And I thought it worked very, very well. Now, you know, if he had a longer-term plan, would he have done anything different in that game? I think yes. I think yes, because I think the back three was in effect at times a back five. And without boring you with tactics, I would have just... I hope we do something a bit different tomorrow and be a little bit more advanced. Maybe play Mikey Johnston, for example, and Chidozie and Sammy Smodic and Evan Ferguson, and really take the game to the Swiss, rather than thinking it's only two games, I don't want a defeat on my CV. You know, I think John was in a bit of a difficult position, because he probably thinks, look, if I do okay in these two games, I might have a chance. And he does have a chance. And what you don't want to do is do anything too bold and suffer a defeat, right? So I think he did exactly right. A little bit cautious, but with enough flair on the pitch to trouble them. And look, it was a really good performance, a lot of positives. And it was kind of exactly as I think we kind of hoped it would go against the Belgian team, which, to be honest, I wouldn't have much to fear from them. We knew they had a few players out. We knew they were maybe, you know, not going to be all guns firing. And the Swiss aren't either. So I'm glad how we took the game to them. But I hope we really, you know, really take it to the Swiss tomorrow night. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, you mentioned the formation there, and obviously this back three with wing backs was something Stephen Kenny was using. But, you know, kind of thinking about it in hindsight and looking at the profile of the wing backs and full backs and who would be natural in those roles, does it feel to you there's a paucity of natural full backs and it just lends itself to having wing backs? Because let's say Robbie Brady, his cross for Evan Ferguson, which Ferguson headed over, and some of his deliveries from there, I don't think he can play as a left back, would he?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what though, you know where that move came from? Evan's header came from the kickoff, and that kickoff, we have used really good kickoffs under Stephen Kenny, and John has continued that. So that chance came from the second half kickoff, and we started both halves really, really well, which was a positive. And there's, you know, little bits and pieces. Probably John looks at Stephen's time and goes, well, you know, did, when I was in the staff under Stephen, did we have everyone fit? Well, probably not. He's got everyone fit now, and he got that type of performance. But I guess, look, the wing backs. One thing I think he said, John, which I think is you have to be careful of. He says we played a back three, all Premier League players, which was true. Some of those players might not be Premier League players next season. And I think if you hang your hat on picking players because they're Premier League players, I think for Ireland, that's always going to change. That's always going to fluctuate. And I think I might just sacrifice one of them and put another winger on. And really, you know, let's see if that top part of the pitch, which I think we're quite strong now with Ida scoring goals and, you know, Aaron Connolly, we got as well Troy Parrott scoring goals. We've got Smodic scoring. Evan, obviously, will get back amongst the goals. Michael Johnson's amongst the goals. Ogbene's doing really well. that part of the pitch I think we need to focus on and put a few more players there. And I think we could throw caution to the wind with the back three. And the wing backs are kind of, I thought at times, turned into a back five. And that's what we don't want. But look, Robbie's got great quality. Seamus, great quality. And I guess they were a very experienced back five and didn't give anything away, which was probably the right call, although I'd like a little bit more caution thrown maybe against the Swiss.
Alan, I know it was a friendly and it was John O'Shea, he only has two games, etc, etc. Did you see any difference from the team that Stephen Kenny picked and the way they played to what John O'Shea did?
I just thought the shape and the structure of the team, we were a lot tougher to beat. We weren't as open. Sometimes I felt under Stephen, and that's because obviously he wanted to play a little bit more expansive, if you like, Ruby. So you're always leaving yourself open. And I think, as David alluded to there, I felt John O'Shea was that extra little bit cautious. Not because he's a cautious manager, and obviously we've only seen him in the one game, but because I think of the opposition that we were playing against, and he was probably just a little bit wary of that because of who we were playing. Had we been playing one of the lower ranked nations, I actually think he might have went with the back four. When I was picking the team here Friday night, I thought he would go with a back four and go away from the five. I think it was purely down to the opposition. Also the fact that the strongest personnel we have in the departments of the team is in that centre half area, because we're very, very strong there, and you have Jacob Ryan to come back into the mix as well for that. I felt Seamus probably would play, but as a right full, but I thought Seamus was outstanding, probably one of the best games he's played in a long, long time, especially when you think in the second half how tricky a customer Doku is, and he's causing all sorts of Premier League fullbacks problems all year, and Seamus was excellent. So not hugely different from what we've seen, Ruby. I just thought we were a little bit better set up in terms of out of possession, that we looked harder to break down, and maybe that's why the inclusion of Will Smallbone was in the team as well. Not so much that he's a player that'll be breaking up play and winning tackles, but he covers a lot of ground, Will Smallbone. I actually thought, again, like David said about Mikey Johnson, I thought he'd go with the four attacking players and play two sitting ones, so Josh Cullen alongside maybe a Jason Knight, and have two sitting in front of a back four. He chose to go with Will Smallbone because of that legs and energy, I think, that he gives you around the pitch, which didn't really free up Sammy Smodic in the central area that he wanted. He had to play more off the left, whereas I think Mikey Johnson would have been probably far better off the left if you're playing with that two sitting and four in attack, if you like, so you could get Smodic behind Connolly and you had Stillog Bennett over on the right. But I think that's what he probably will go tomorrow. He'll get those four players in those attacking areas on the pitch tomorrow and have more of a go.
But David, if you're managing Ireland, do you not have to be a realist, and making us hard to beat has to be the first place you start?
Yeah, well, look, Ruby, I think any manager, when you get the reins, it could be for a game or two games or whatever, you obviously, you need a bit of positivity, and that probably starts with keeping it tight, you know, a clean sheet or whatever, and you move on, obviously, understandably. And look, the shape, and the lads knew what they were doing in that shape, right? And they played it a lot. The Belgians have often played a back three as well, so they were kind of matching them up. So that's by the by. But I think other little bits and pieces that I thought were quite good is, it reminded me of, say, when I played with Quinny or Niall Quinn, or Robbie played with Niall Quinn. We hit a few long balls, Evan won the flick on, and there's Sammy Smodic running in behind, getting a chance. You know, route one, it worked. And the set piece, the penalty came from a ball in the box. He won the first header. We got a penalty, you know. So kind of like the balance was good, you know, in terms of playing and also playing to our strengths a little bit. And, you know, I thought that was, you know, there was sort of plenty of positives. And, you know, Chibadozi had a good chance early on. And like I say, we started both halves well, which meant I think the pre-match team talk before the game and at halftime were good. You know, all those little bits and pieces were really, really positive. And obviously the players went out, you know, full of confidence. And it was a good performance. And I'd be amazed if those lads would not want John to stay on. You know, I'd be amazed. And look, they haven't got that much time, because their statement said the start of April, they'll be making an announcement. Well, you know, that is coming pretty quick. And I don't know who they've got lined up, but... You know, why not, John? Because, you know, 108 in caps or whatever it is, plenty of managers, Guardiolas and all these types have gone straight into management jobs. He's got experience. You know, he's not as a number one. An international job is a big job, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it'd be nice if we trusted one of our own here and went with, you know, another former player or whatever and gave him a crack of it. You know, that's what I'd be thinking.
On that last one, sorry, Raf, just on to Ruby's question as well. I felt it was all very simple, the instruction. And if you go back to John O'Shea's press conference, as we mentioned it during the week, the messaging is very simple and very clear. There's no jargon, there's no overcomplicating anything. And I felt what he brought into press conferences, even answering questions, was the exact same as what he brought onto the pitch in terms of the instruction that he was given. Kept it very, very simple. All the players knew their job. They were very well drilled about what he wanted them to do. And I think that's how it played out on Saturday.
Yeah, because actually, David, just on that, I mean, listening to like Gary Neville and Roy Keane recently on their podcast, they do talk about in Alex Ferguson's time, you didn't really hear too much about, you know, elaborate tactical formations or anything like that. It seemed it's just everybody knows their role and it's very cohesive. And obviously, John O'Shea was lucky enough to be managed by Alex Ferguson. So, of course, maybe some of those elements will filter in.
Yeah, and look, you don't have that long, right? You've got a couple of days with the lads, a few training sessions. So, you know, and you know, there's only so much information you can impart onto these players. But what I would say, as I think Ruby alluded to, you know, we're always going to be up against it to pull out results against really, really good teams and qualify for stuff. And to do that, you're going to be greater than the sum of your parts. And that is that comes down to more than just, you know, team spirit and everyone getting on and, you know, following simple instructions. There's come a time where you need to get your tactics spot on. And, you know, sometimes that is the difference. That can be the difference. So, and that will be the challenge for John when you have to go and win a game of football and you might have to tweak things or the back three's not working or, you know, there's lads out of form, you've got injuries. You know, if he gets to that stage, he'll have to contend with everything Stephen did as the number one, because he had to do that. And that'll be the challenge. But for now, look, two games. If he does well in the Swiss one, I think he gives himself a really good chance. And there is a place for keeping things simple and clear messages. And there's also a place where we need someone who's going to help us make the difference. And that could be as a coach, not just as players, and that's where the top coaches earn their money.
Yeah, and I suppose Sammy Smodic, that simplicity would have helped him slot in because he seemed to connect very well with Chidozie Ogbene beside him and then also Evan Ferguson up front. And we have to remember it's his first cap. I know he's not a young player per se, but in terms of his performance, what did you make of it, David? I mean, because he's a weird, you know, that position he was playing, that kind of tucked in sort of that link man between midfield and that attacking line. Stephen Kenny has played that before with the likes of Jamie McGrath, who, and in those kind of positions, they're like an attacking midfielder trying to move forward, whereas Smodics is the other way around, it seems, a forward player who's sort of moving back.
Yeah, exactly. For those people that might not be watching a lot of Championship football, they might not know that much about Sammy, but I mean, he has mostly played as a central striker, sometimes as a number 10, and he is powerful, he's strong. You know, he's quick. He can go off both feet, left and right, drift into either channel. And I think he's someone you got to have down through the middle. That's what I think. So how do you get him down through the middle? Because if you have him off the left as a winger type in a different formation, a back 3-4-3, you might lose some of his quality. And if I was him, you know, when no one wants to talk about their own career, but when I got a chance, you know, I didn't play as a winger. I played for Ireland as a striker because that was my strength. And his strength is as a striker, a goal scorer. And I think you want him to be paired with Evan down through the middle, not maybe as a two, but as a nine and someone, and Sammy just a little bit deeper. I think they could do an awful lot of damage. I really like him. He works so hard. He presses. I think he's perfect for us. I think he's perfect and he's got quality. He does have a lot of quality. He really does. So I think he's going to be a really good player for us for the future. That's for sure. And I'm hoping him and Evan we'll put the penalty behind him. You know, he's obviously lacking a bit of confidence, maybe, Evan. And, you know, he'll be fine once, you know, put their arms around him. He'll, you know, the lads will get around him, make him feel good, and he'll get over that penalty miss.
With a bit of luck, he'll get his chance tomorrow night. David Connolly and Alan Cawley, thank you so much. We'll have extended Game On tomorrow night and live match commentary of Ireland versus Switzerland on an extended Game On, and we'll have build-up to all that as well. And maybe we'll get to see how many changes John O'Shea will make. We have a quick break to take now. Back with hurling after this.
Game On.
Hurling.
All right, welcome back to Game On, and it's time to chat hurling. In the first of the league semi-finals on Saturday, Kilkenny beat All-Ireland champions Limerick 3-17 to 1-15, and Derek Ling's side will be joined in the decider by Clare, who backed up their strong round-robin phase with a 1-24 to 2-13 win over Tipperary yesterday in Portlaoise. So to talk all that and more, we're joined by former Limerick hurler Niall Moore. Niall, how are you? I suppose we'll come to Kilkenny very shortly, but first on Limerick, I suppose John Kiely was very blunt about his assessment of his own Limerick side's performance, described it as shockingly low by their standards and right up there among the worst performances of their current era. You know, when you were watching that match on Saturday, are you looking at it thinking it's just, you know, an off day that's come at the right time in terms of they have time to rectify it, or did you see a couple of issues there that might be an issue long term?
Really, Raph, like John, sound bites, they don't come as any surprise. In a way, he'll probably view it as a blessing that so it's 4 or 5 weeks out from championship that he has a chance with he has a stick to beat his players with. Did Limerick throw the kitchen sink at the game? I don't think you can stand over and say that they did in terms of their selection for the game. I don't think that you could argue that Limerick threw the kitchen sink at it, even in terms of some of the choice substitutions that took place later on in the game. Obviously they wanted to go out and win it, but it wasn't going to be a case of winning it at all costs. But in the very same breath, like, you can't just go and disregard every time you win a game, you're the best team in the world. Every time you lose a game, you just put it as an off day. And look, there were elements of play that were uncharacteristic of Limerick, maybe their openness at the back. Now, to be fair, for anyone who's probably watched them play some of the league games this year, like, they haven't really set up the way they would have in other years in terms of defending that D. They have tended to, as backs, maybe follow their players up the pitch and maybe go after it a la what kind of Clare have done, and that which probably created goal chances even in the game against, like, Dublin. There was goal chances for Dublin, and obviously then, okay, the game below in the goals conceded against Tipperary, 3, and again, 3 goals conceded the last day. But inadvertently, you still know that Limerick have the capacity just to revert to type, and when you have all the personnel back in tow, then obviously they're going to be a far different proposition. But like everything else, look, I'm sure there's lots of players there who will need just to get their form over the next 4 to 5 weeks, and look, the time away from the limelight will give them plenty of time and try and play these in-house games. But you cannot take away from Kilkenny were superb, and one of the biggest compliments I'd have to pay to Kilkenny is they didn't try to mimic what Limerick have been doing. They played to their strengths, and so that direct long cross-field ball that they did on multiple occasions leading to 2 goals in the two first half goals, I think, I suppose you just have to tip your hat to them that they are a serious, serious outfit and definitely one who are going to be there at the latter end of the championship.
Obviously, Kilkenny aren't facing into the same championship as Limerick are. Munster's obviously a hotter division than Leinster is. So will Derek Ling have looked at that and thought, right, Kilkenny, we need to put more into the league, to go after this more, to get games against the better teams?
But traditionally, Kilkenny have always gone after the league and they've never made any bones about it, but I suppose, like, so their situation is quite different to that of the Munster teams. Like, they do have a little bit more scope in Leinster, and as you said, look, they just have that little bit more scope. So it was definitely a win-win for Derek Ling. Like, go at it and lose it, at least you know where you're at, and obviously go at it and win it. It's not going to put any dent in his championship prospects, and I think maybe the league as a whole maybe would have needed Kilkenny to win that semi-final. Obviously it opens up a more, I won't call it a novel pairing, but so it was a more unfamiliar pairing, Kilkenny and Clare. But look, again, if you had 2 Munster teams going at it in a league final, I know we had this conversation last day, but I don't think it could have been a genuine final. So Derek Ling will be delighted, and again, I said last week to Ruby, I still have huge time for Kilkenny. It wouldn't have taken a whole pile for them to be come out a different side of the results in the All-Ireland final or any of the previous meetings at Limerick. And again, bear in mind, 2019, they were the last team to beat them. So I just think it reaffirmed maybe in Kilkenny the confidence that they have within themselves. And look, it was an eye-opener even to supporters there in Limerick to maybe not take for granted what's happened over the last number of years, because the big three are starting to come. Tipperary looked a little bit stronger this year than what they had previously. Cork are looking a little bit stronger, and obviously Kilkenny. So, again, look, it was a huge positive day for Kilkenny.
Yeah, and I suppose the contrast in terms of the hunger levels that could be seen between Kilkenny and Limerick, that third goal that TJ Reid scores, I suppose the build-up where Cian Lynch is basically swamped in the middle almost sums it up.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose, look, you're looking in there and we're looking at new names with Kilkenny team, Jordan Malloy and Luke Hogan and these guys, and obviously they're going to go at it blood and guts, like, and they're going to want to pit themselves against the best in the country. And Kilkenny, to a man, that they showed that hunger, but I don't think that hunger was ever missing from them either. So I mean, that's probably stereotypical of what Kilkenny have always done. And just they were never gone away. Like, again, their record over the last two or three years says that they are the top performers in the country alongside Limerick, and maybe you could argue Clare and Galway. So, like, do we learn anything new from last Saturday's game? No. But again, I know Donald Logue maybe used the example there of phony warfare. Like, again, if Limerick threw the kitchen sink at it, I would send over and I'd say, well, hold up, there are worries, there are concerns and that. But I honestly just don't think they threw the kitchen sink at it. And I suppose even the events leading up to the game over the past week, they've been hard. I suppose it was just probably no harm that they're maybe gone out of the limelight for a couple of weeks until the real business starts.
Yeah, and talk to me a little bit about Colin O'Neill as well, because he seemed to be the one shining light in what was an otherwise lacklustre performance, and he's had a very good league as well.
Yeah, superb right the way throughout the league, and again, he's has an attacking option. He's been excellent. I suppose, look, again, he probably has things to learn about defending and whether he'll settle at a half-back position or a midfield position or even a centre-back position over the next couple of weeks. It remains to be seen. But again, he can't argue that he hasn't probably done enough to warrant a start. I would imagine at this stage he definitely has done enough to warrant a start. And there's other guys who are like Donegal Dolig, looks very sharp for any little bit of ball that he did get. He didn't see a whole pile of ball. So like there has been positive there. Adam English, whilst it wasn't his best performance last day, he's very positive in a couple of games leading up to it. So like the league has paid huge dividends to Limerick, and obviously has paid huge dividends to Kilkenny, Clare, and a number of teams. And again, for me, it just reaffirms the exciting championship that we're going to have. I just think it's going to be one of the best championships that we've ever had. At the moment, you can see our winners coming out of four or five real teams. Like, and so if Cork light fire the way they can, which they have in recent league games, they're going to add another team into it. So look, again, it just puts to bed maybe some of this talk that it's Limerick to lose. It was never Limerick to lose. It's for every team to win, and that goes for Limerick as well.
You got that vibe listening to the Sunday game last night on different podcasts today as well, Niall. But if you're looking at Kilkenny and you're looking at the clinicalness that would be needed to win an All-Ireland final or get all the way to an All-Ireland final, they got three goals at the weekend. They could have got a hell of a lot more. Are they going to need to be a bit sharper?
Yeah, they are. But again, Ruby, I disregard it. I'm going to be honest. I just don't think Limerick's set up the way that they will be set up. They've been experimenting with things. Say that again, Ruby.
The full back line didn't even resemble the one that'll be in the championship.
Personnel wise, a couple of them might be there, but obviously not in the same position. And again, a new spine of a defence. And they're the things that you're going to have to play with, though, because who knows? You get a couple of injuries early on, and straight away the complexion of a championship looks different. And if nothing else, Ruby, like, it just made it for better entertainment. Like, it's been death by 1,000 points for the last number of years, and goals is what creates a buzz in the stadium and a vibe in the stadium. But if nothing else, it was the one thing maybe over the weekend, over the games, that like there was really no atmosphere, even above Moore Park, which is a tighter pitch. Even when the game got hot and heavy, it just seemed very devoid of atmosphere. And that's one of the caveats that they would throw into this year's league. Like, and it's true, no one's fault, but the weather conditions, like, they're completely at odds with what you're going to get. Well, what we're hopefully going to get in 5 or 6 weeks' time. And straight away, the nature of players, like, there's a lot of guys who shine in summer weather that might be lost in heavy going. So I suppose they're all caveats. Like, when passing the judgment, I would say that Limerick is still a very, very strong team. Teams have caught up with them, and in the same breath last year, they wouldn't be getting carried away with Limerick walking the league. I also wouldn't be getting carried away with them losing on Saturday.
What about what happened in Portlaoise then? Tip and Clare, Brian Lowen seems to have introduced a lot of new blood in Clare, some big names to come back. Are Clare the team that are coming?
They'll be looking forward to June, I'd say, and between Willie Clancy, and I think they'll be hoping that there'll be a Munster and All-Ireland honours coming. And at the moment, right throughout the league, they've looked like the front runners. Again, he reaffirmed his faith in a number of guys that he gets starts yesterday, like Conor Nean started again, Keane Galvin, Darrell Lohan, Keith Smith, a lot of guys. He has said to them, "Do you know what? You put your hands up in previous games, I'm going to stand over you." And like, I suppose Clare are in a really exciting place. There's four or five top-notch players to come back. They've found a couple of guys. They're a big physical team. And bear in mind, a lot of these guys have won All-Ireland in the past, and that's huge currency as the year goes on. And whilst some of the chasing pack, their belief might be tested when they come down the home straight of a game, for a lot of these Clare guys, they do know that if they're in with a shout coming down the home straight, that they've been there before and been successful. And look, in the short term, would they take a National League title? I'd say, Brian, no one would bite your hand off for it today, because again, it's like everything else, you can have all the form and everything else, but when your career is over, you're going to count up what you've won medals wise and let nobody disregard National League medal. There's a lot of guys, myself included, would have cut your hand off to win one. And I think in the short term, I think Clare's focus for now is just going to be on Kilkenny getting that performance. And I'm sure for the guys that are looking in from the outside, the Tony Kellys, David Max, they'll be chomping at their bit that they get their places back, because you know, if you have a winning team, it can sometimes be hard to replace them.
Yeah, and just how much of a psychological hurdle will it be, that league final, given the matchups we've seen between Kilkenny and Clare and All-Ireland semi-finals in the last two meetings?
In my opinion, none. I don't think Clare fear Kilkenny. Again, you'd argue 2 years ago, okay, I would have said that the last John Conlon had a seismic effect right the way throughout the team. And last year, again, it took a piece of individual brilliance, Mo Murphy, to be the difference between the teams. And Clare probably fluffed that game. Definitely last year's game, they would fluff that game, but it wasn't because of the hold that Kilkenny have on them. Maybe it was just maybe a lack of inexperience, maybe personnel-wise, maybe not as strong as what they are now going forward. But I just think for now, I really think that it'll be a piece of silver that even Clare, probably more so than Kilkenny, will value. I'm not quite sure, is it 14 or 15 they won their last National League? And again, like for the Dermot Ryans and that, like there's guys that have come through the previous Clare underage system that wouldn't have been exposed to having those victories. And I think for those lads, that'll be a massive filler up as they go forward, and will give them the belief that the newer guys will need. And look, for Brian Nolan, I suppose it kind of reaffirms, like, again, as a manager, you're always going to have doubts over yourself. Like all sports people, you doubt yourself every day of the week. And again, I just think a little bit of success for him will reaffirm what he has done over the last 6 months in particular.
How's Liam Cahill feeling this morning then with Tipperary?
He looks fairly peeved off, lads, isn't he? There's a penny for his thoughts, I think, looking in from the outside. But again, you know, like even his reaction afterwards, maybe in years gone by he'd have blown the lid, but I think he recognised it for what it was. Like they, like new free takers, especially the calibre of Jason Ford, he's an incredible forward, an incredible free taker. You know, if he had a duck, they'd have drowned. There's days when that's going to happen. And I think the encouraging thing for Tip was they put themselves in a position 5-10 minutes after half time whereby they could have on another day really pushed on and challenged Clare. And I just think the nature of their wides, in particular the ones in dead balls, they probably sucked the life out of them. But again, he's on the right road, and I know they said that last night on the television, but he just maybe needs one or two more kind of central players. But again, like we have Noel McGrath come back into action there as well, and I think he has a huge influence on those lads around him. And maybe in a case like yesterday when you needed the game to be settled, if you had Noel McGrath standing over a couple of those threes, I think he would have been the guy who would have popped them irrespective of what had gone on prior to it. So look, Tipper are in a very, very good place too. The league has been kind to them. They've tried a lot of players. And again, Liam Cahill, he's 4 or 5 years on the inter-county road between Waterford and now Tipperary, and I think he'll be a better manager for this coming forward.
Yeah, and one of the points that was made about Tip, and Donald Logue was mentioning it on Allianz League Sunday last night, was the lack of killer instinct among the forwards, as you mentioned there, the wides and everything else. How big an issue is that long term though, going into Championship?
Obviously a concern. In old money, you look at Tipperary and you see the calibre of their forwards, and like you see the Owen Kellys and the Nick Englishes and Tommy Dunns, and they stood out like a sore thumb. And again, I know the reference that's for, like, Jake Morris is probably on the probably starting point of what will be a very illustrious career. Jason Ford probably well into it. Outside of that, we have a lot of new guys, but it just takes time. It takes a couple of big wins, and do you know what I mean? Gerard O'Connor is, and I've referenced him here a number of times, he's a superb forward, just had a bad day. And sure, that's part of the learning curve, lads, isn't it? As in, there's going to be days when it's just going to go, it's going to go against you. And I suppose the key there is just keep, when everyone around you is losing their heads, just keep your own head. And I think, judging from Liam yesterday, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And again, look, there's probably the one concern for Tipperary going into the Championship will be is that they will have to go 4 weeks in a row. And in terms of starting 15, like they don't have as many to pick from as what the other counties do. So again, with 4 games in a row, you'd wonder with fatigue and quite possibly injury, you know, be a huge hindrance, and that is probably the biggest concern that I would have maybe for Tipperary going forward.
Well, it's 4 weeks to the Munster Championship, 5 weeks before Tipperary play, three spots in Munster, Limerick, Clare, and who else, Niall Moran?
Limerick, Clare, and I think you're going to have to try and put my neck on the line, and I am going to say Cork. And again, Cork have, you know, they're like a horse that has good odds. Every time you always think that you're going to get a winner off them, and then they let you down. But look, again, like that, they're a couple of years on the road. They've changed their style of play. And I really think, lads, it's going to be a different championship to what we've seen in the league. Like, just conditions, like even the pitch conditions there in Port Leash yesterday, they were very, very slow, very heavy. And, like, I know, come back to your own time. The league is, yeah, it's the league, and you think you are trying to go all out, but you're also training all out at the same time. Whereas over the next 3 or 4 weeks, training will start to taper down. Like, you start going into the Thurlesses and Gaelic Grounds and these places for training, a different buzz comes. Please God, a bit of weather adds to it. And I just really think it's going to be an incredible championship. There's something special going to happen in this championship, and whether that's the crowning of a 5-in-a-row team or that's crowning of new champions, like, you know what I mean? I really think this is going to be a special championship.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of excitement to come. I don't know about the weather, but look, anyway, Niall, thanks very much for your time. And up next, it's going to be Gaelic football with Brendan Devaney. All right, welcome back to Game On, and time to turn to football after the final round robin games in the Allianz League. And we know the lay of the land now. In Division 1, Dublin and Derry will meet in the league final, while Roscommon are joining Monaghan and going down. The top end of Division 2 was clarified before this weekend, with Donegal and Armagh up and meeting in the final, but joining Kildare as the relegated parties is Fermanagh. Despite a good win over Cavan on Saturday, the Division 3 final will be between Down and Westmeath, while Wicklow and Limerick have been relegated and will be replaced by this year's Division 4 finalists Laois and Leitrim. And to discuss all that and more, we're joined by Brendan Devaney. Brendan, how are you?
Good, Ralph, yourself?
Not too bad now, in good form. And I suppose where we can start off, it's, tying in the league and the start of the championship, given where we're at. And I suppose, has your view changed or has your view been cemented in regards to the tough side of that Ulster draw, having seen those seven rounds of the league? And I suppose I'm talking more about where Derry, Donegal and Tyrone will probably meet in a semi-final, and one of those two will.
Yeah. Listen, I think if you look at the landscape of the league now, we've had different teams put their hand up and we're thinking, are they going to be a team that can come in and compete with the top nine? And if you're looking at it, it's very much that, you know, the teams that we thought would be at the top of the league are at the top of it, and they're the best teams in the country getting into the championship. And it's no surprise that, you know, a lot of people are looking, is it going to be Dublin or Derry? They're in the final, Kerry just right in behind them. And, the ease of which the likes of Donegal and Armagh came up as well just shows that that top nine, you know, are a good step ahead, and I include Monaghan in that as well. I know they got relegated, but you could see in the last couple of games that they could have a go. They're getting players back. You know, they posted 216 and 116 there, and that's kind of up at the scoring rate. They're just conceding that wee bit too much. So I think outside of that, you know, obviously, as I say, with Donegal and Armagh going up, obviously Mayo and Tyrone and Galway in there, they're all the chasing pack to them top three. So I think the league in this, some people have been complaining about the league a small bit in terms of, you know, maybe some of the hammerings and some of the play that we've seen in it. But I think it's very much going to reflect the top teams going into the championship.
As we had in the hurling, Brendan, it was played in much different weather conditions to what the championship is going to be played in. But can you see those six closing the gap on the three, Dublin, Derry and Kerry, who in the league look to be a little bit ahead?
Yeah, that's a great point, Ruby, on the championship and the play. And particularly, you've got to think Croke Park on a hot summer's day. And I was listening to the show. You cover a lot of ground, my man. Great stuff, eh? But listen, if you look at Dublin last week down in Galway on heavy conditions, you know, they post 22 points. And you can see there, you know, against Tyrone yesterday in Croke Park, you know, the 5-18. And I think that's a big sign of what you're saying there, Ruby. You know, kick passing the ball on a good pitch, you know, particularly Croke Park, where obviously Dublin are the masters, means goal opportunities are going to come. Dublin should have had 7 or 8 goals. And I think compare that to the Galway game on a heavy pitch, and you can see that by and large, that maybe that direct type of fast ball isn't on. It's more about points and posting and hitting from distance. Whereas you could see with Dublin there, particularly yesterday, you know, they were catching Tyrone out just with direct kick pass in. So I think, yeah, it's a decent point. As we look at it, even the scoring rates, all the top teams, goals are a big factor in them beating other sides and really imposing themselves on other teams.
Yeah, and just on Roscommon as well, obviously going down, and just reading Lee Keegan's column as well. Now, this was before this final round of games, and he was saying Roscommon appear to have regressed on the evidence of this league. Their attacking play has been slow and laborious with little penetration. I know Davy Burke has alluded to the players they're missing, but everyone else is in the same boat. Does that tally with what you've seen of them this year?
Yeah, also it's such a strange one because they were a breath of fresh air last year. I mean, no new manager in. We've seen it many times, the bounce, maybe coming in a bit more fit and more direct, but they certainly were exciting to watch. I just can't understand. Like, as you say, one night again, 4 points in the second half in a game where they were kind of fighting for their lives. He scored 4 points at home last week against Kerry with the breeze. So, you know, they're always a team blessed with forwards. You're thinking, how come they're not getting into that way of playing? And I know at the start of the league, obviously Mark McHugh stepped away. I know Davy Burke wanted the Bridges players to play in that opening round game to Tyrone. They didn't. They weren't involved in it. So I don't know, was there something maybe happened in the camp? But they certainly don't look like they're in any way now, as you said, going to be, as we're on about that chasing pack. They're the one outside it, I think, closest to it. Maybe someone like a Cavan, maybe after that. But really, it seems a long way back for any of them teams to come in to really mix it with those top sides. That said, you know, Mayo and the Hyde, in a few weeks' time, who knows? You can forget about the league very quick if you have a big championship victory.
Do you think Mayo have paced themselves this differently this year? They were gung-ho in the league last year and it didn't work out for them in the championship. Do you think they've changed tack?
Yeah, it's hard to know. Lee McKeel obviously walking away, you're like, you had very different points of view from the lads was in there. They have a huge management team, always a physically strong and powerful side. Ruby, we keep wondering defensively how they're going to be set. They've mixed the good with the bad this year. Maybe this and a lot of teams have done that in the league, but when they are bad, Mayo tend to be very bad. And when they go at teams and they have a proper cut, they look like they can take any team on. It's just that thing of they never look solid enough as a defensive shape breaking forward. And then you just think, even though O'Donoghue is unbelievable up front as a player, are they too over-reliant? Of course they are. They never seem to have had enough of that firepower. And particularly now, Ruby, with the scoring averages going up and up, you just think that are they going to register enough? You know, they came late. Of course, that was a good victory away to Monaghan yesterday, because certainly Monaghan were looking to finish the season on a high. So listen, that was positive from them. But you just think at times against the bigger teams, you know, they've struggled in terms of being able to compete with those top sides. I don't think they're a side this year, Ruby, that, you know, they might have won big game in Croke Park, but I can't see them testing any of the top sides when they get there.
Brendan, the big teams will get plenty of airtime between now and the middle of, or the end of June, early July, but next Saturday night it will be a day in Croke Park for some of the lesser teams, down in Westmeath, Leash and Leitrim. It is a big weekend for them, isn't it?
Yeah, huge, Ruby. This argument we were having it there last week about the league, I mean, to me, a league's a league. You know, and I know Mickey Hart was saying it'd be a disgrace if you did away with league finals because of what you're saying. That's the only reason for me that there should be league finals. I think, listen, he was saying, well, what if we got handed the cup yesterday? What would it mean? But I was like, well, that's what a league does mean. It means that you're the best team throughout the league. Now, let's just say, for argument's sake, Ruby, that Dublin were a few points behind and maybe three or four, and Derry had hammered them in the league already, and then Dublin overturned them by a point and won the league. That's not really the way a league's supposed to be. Now, I know in other sports you have playoffs and it builds to something. But the only reason for me is, like you're saying there, people get a day out in Croke Park because it is a magical place to be. And no matter when you play there, it's a great thing. I don't think it means as much, obviously, to Dublin or Derry necessarily. Definitely not. And maybe as much to some of the Donegal lads. Admittedly, new players haven't played there playing Armagh next week. But certainly for the three and the four winners, it might be the only chance those lads get to play there in a long time. So I think for that reason alone, I'm still happy enough with league finals.
And a final point before we let you go, I suppose Leitrim as well have done very well to get promotion from Division 4. But what's interesting, Keith Byrne, who's such a talisman for them, has opted out for this year, and yet Andy Moran has still found a way to get them up.
Yeah, certainly. And Byrne, listen, was the top striker in the whole leagues last year. And you're thinking, how do you replace someone like that? It's very interesting after, when a striker goes out like that, or a top forward, it's not like you're taking the scores out of the game. You know, the responsibility gets passed around. And it turns in other people step up. And I suppose that's the great thing about football. And we've seen some colossus of football. You know, even today I was talking earlier to Paddy Bradley about different things. And he had mentioned in his time there, obviously Michael Murphy retiring. You know, already, you know, teams have to move on and players have to step up. And I think Andy Murray, he is just like, he's just one of those guys that's so, you know, GAA, he's so invested in the game and he's crazy about it. And he's backing these Leitrim boys all the way. So it was great to see them coming up. I think the two, each team, I think, has been top of the four divisions, has been rightly so. There hasn't been anybody caught out on a last day or haven't made it. I think it's by the four, by the eight teams that have, are there, they're there in merit, and Leitrim's one of them.
Yeah, and the league finals, plenty to look forward to this coming weekend. But Brendan, thanks very much for your time. We're nearly finished here. Ruby, I think you're back on tomorrow.
I am back tomorrow. We, of course, have an extended game on ahead of Ireland versus, or Republic of Ireland, that is, versus Switzerland from the Aviva Stadium. So it'll be a good night, Raf.
Certainly will be. That's our lot for today. And Betis Silva is up next.